Welcome to the Gamer Horizon Podcast. This is episode 16, recorded for May 14th, 2012. Anthony, what's going on, dude?
Not a whole lot, Alex. What about yourself?
Struggling with a cold. It's terrible.
Colds suck.
I know, right? Like, I mean, this is like, oh man, like, I have, like, I sound like I'm doing this. I'm not doing it on purpose. It's just that my nose is totally clogged.
Yeah. You sounded like Elmer Fudder.
No, I did not. But I just can't breathe, though. That's kind of, like, just the problem. It's, like, you know, it's really bothering me. I drank, like, I thought it was, like, my allergy, so I got, like, some Claritin, which, you know, like, it worked at Disneyland, so I was like, okay, well, maybe it'll work at home. So I drank it. I'm like, nope. About an hour later, I'm still, like, sniffling. And so I just drank some NyQuil, and now I'm, like, totally, like, still, like, you know, now I'm like, not to paint a picture of our audience, like, you know, imaginations, but it's dripping right now.
Lovely.
Yes. How about you?
I feel fine. It's just the weather's all jacked up here. It was all hot and, you know, it was 90 last Saturday, then it dropped.
Yeah, the weather has been, like, really funky lately.
And then it was cold all week, and then Thursday it got hot again, and now it's freezing. It's like 50 degrees here, so...
Yeah, it's gonna be like about 54, like, tonight, too. And I'm actually gonna... try to not stay at Disneyland, like, all day today and stuff, because I'm actually meeting some friends there who want to talk about some podcast ideas. So I'm kind of like, okay, well, you know, like, I don't want to stay at the parks too long, because I have the sniffles, and it's really bad, so... It's actually worse than it's ever been. Like, I don't know if people have noticed, but I've actually been on episodes of the podcast where I actually had a cold.
Yeah, you did. We even have a lost episode.
Oh, yeah.
With you being pretty sick.
Yeah, the lost episode where I was just, like, sniffling the whole time and sneezing. Wow, that was crazy.
And don't ask for it. You'll never see it.
Yeah. It's not. Or it could be one of those things where, like, if we're on vacation and stuff, we'll just release it, and they'll be like, why the fuck are you guys, like, talking about, like, Kingdoms of Amalur?
You know? It's like, that happens in, like, 2014 when we release it.
Yeah, people are like, wait, what? What? Kingdoms of Amalur 3 is already out. What are you guys talking about? You know, and watch, like, the same stuff we're talking about in that episode still relevant at that time, and some people won't even notice. They're like, what? Oh, wait. Maybe Alex means 4 or something.
Talked about Final Fantasy 13 too.
Yeah.
I don't even know if those games are relevant now.
I know, right? It's really funny. So, anyways, dude. So what else have you been up to? How's the gaming sitch going?
It's going pretty good.
Yeah?
It's going good. Got some stuff to talk about, of course.
Yeah, so, like, what have you been up to and playing and stuff?
Well, this is a warning to people. The first game I'm going to talk about, this is a warning to avoid it. Even if you have PSN, avoid it. PSN Plus, I mean. PlayStation Plus.
Okay.
Okay, there's this game called Awesome Knots that was released.
Awesome Knots. I've heard of this game, but I'm not sure what it's all about.
It tries to capture the feel of a Saturday morning cartoon, and it, you know, even has, like, a, you know, one of those cheesy ass intros with some guy just, you know, jingle and shit.
Oh, by the way, not to derail you, I wanted to kind of slip it in because he mentioned Saturday morning cartoon, and I just kind of remembered this. Saturday morning RPG, I booted it up again after a patch, and it kept on crashing after I tried to get to the next area.
I actually will say this about the patch. I did boot it up as well.
Uh-huh.
Enemy resilience is down.
It is. Like, I actually realized that when I restarted a game, because of course that meant my save was, like, you know, invalid and stuff, which is probably why it's crashing. Hey guys, testers, hello, we're out there. Yeah, like, so I had to, like, restart it and stuff. The first battle wasn't bad. It wasn't, like, a freaking, like, half hour affair again.
Yeah, yeah. It the enemy resilience is a hell of a lot down. So
yeah.
maybe once you get into it, maybe you'll like the title more. We'll see.
Yeah, I'll let you know about that. But anyways, continue. Anyways, sorry about that.
Awesome Knots tries to capture that feel of a cheesy Saturday morning. It has like, you know, all these like a cowboy character and shit. While that's a nice homage, too bad the game fucking sucks. God damn, that is a horrible game.
Whoa.
It's probably as bad as Amy.
Whoa. That's Amy.
Yeah, whoever level design don't, you know, like, go look at, like, Super Mario Brothers 3 or, you know, something. Don't get your level design from fucking just, you don't, when you design a level, don't just place things there.
So is it like a platformer?
I don't know what the fuck it is. I guess it's a platformer, but then I guess sometimes it's like a Contra, like, I don't know what it is. It is a horrible game.
Okay.
Don't even get it for free.
Well, you have to tell me why I shouldn't get it other than why
you shouldn't get
it.
I'll tell you why. First of all, the level design is like, is the same over and over and over.
So it's like pre 1989, 88 NES days?
Even games in that time had better level design than this shit.
Okay,
let me tell you how it works. It tries to add variety but fails, and the reason it fails is you have these concepts like you have to protect the generator, destroy a generator, and what's funny is they design it as a platformer, but it's like, oh, you move, stop, destroy, jump over a few things, oh, stop. A platformer should not have you stop consistently like that. A platformer should always kind of, this is how I feel about platformers, is they should always have kind of like a smooth consistency in their level design. You know, it's kind of like what we were talking about last week, Adventure Island, right? Adventure Island, we were talking about what makes that game good was, you know, how they base their level design over enemy placement. But it's kind of like it just keeps you moving, you know? It's just boom, keep moving, keep moving, keep moving. It's not stop. You know, the only time you stop is possibly a boss battle.
So you're possibly talking about like kind of like the flow of the level design and stuff. Like,
you know.
Okay.
Yeah. And then what's funny is they make all these different goals, and what they do is in other levels is they use the same goals over, but they'll put it. For example, in the first level, you might have to destroy a generator.
Uh huh.
Right away, and then you know the different obstacles will be a little bit more spread out. And then in the next level, it's the same thing, but they're in different places. So instead of destroying the generator, you have to defend it at the beginning of the level.
Okay.
It's not like they, it's like they use the same, what they do is they use the same obstacles and goals over and over again.
That's kind of sucky.
Yeah. Instead of adding new ones.
So it's free on PSN though.
Yeah, it's not even worth that.
Okay, well, I will try to check it out and just kind of see if, like, what you mean and stuff.
And the controls feel, like, sluggish. They feel extremely sluggish.
Okay.
Like, I don't know if it's the animations or the reaction time or what, but it just feels sluggish as all fuck.
Wow. That's kind of disheartening and stuff. Like, who made this game?
I don't even know.
Oh.
I don't know, but we'll talk about, let's move on though from that game, and we'll talk about another game that was free on PlayStation Plus that is also a platformer but actually good. And that's Trine 2.
Oh, it got released for free. That's right.
Yeah, Trine 2.
You know, what's funny is I've been thinking of like getting that on the PC and stuff, but you know, but I was always like kind of like holding out on it just because like I'm like, man, you know. I'm pretty sure there's gonna be like a, you know, like a deal or something like that, like either on Xbox Live or, you know, or PlayStation Network. And of course, like this happened, so I'm like, yay! But I have to like actually like go to my PlayStation 3 and actually turn it on and freaking download the game before it like disappears.
I really enjoyed the first Trine.
See, I'm not familiar with the Trine series, so from what I could tell, though, from what I've seen from it, it was kind of sort of ish this multi-class platformer, right?
Yeah, what it is it's a very traditional, if you even want to say, kind of generic fantasy world, right?
Okay.
And even the characters fall into archetypes. You have three, it's a platformer, and you have three characters, and you switch among each character, depending on the situation. So the three characters are a wizard who looks like, typical wizard, the hat, everything. You kind of have the big fat guardsman, the fighter character. And then you have the thief, the kind of sexy, you know, thief character. She's there. And what happens in this game is you use their different abilities for different situations. For example, like, you know, the wizard, he can build blocks.
Uh-huh.
Out of nothing, pretty much, because he's a wizard.
So kind of like, you know, Solomon's Key, where the guy has a wand and makes the blocks and stuff?
Yeah, kind of. Yeah, kind of like that. He'll make blocks, and you could, you know, or cubes or whatever you want to call them. He'll make the cubes, and what'll happen is you could use them as jumping stones when you need them.
Okay.
But he also has other abilities where he can levitate the blocks and things like that.
Uh-huh.
And then there's also the other characters, like the wizard, he can do that, but he's kind of physically the weakest character. The thief, on the other hand, what she does is she has a grappling hook. She's the better jumper, obviously.
Uh-huh.
And she does have an offensive move, which is the arrow.
Uh-huh.
She can aim arrows. Mind you, the wizard does get offensive spells later on, such as fireballs and such, but even then you have to be careful. And that's what makes this game brilliant, I think.
So basically there's like a mix advantage disadvantage, whether, you know, depending on whether it's platforming or combat.
Yeah. And then of course you got the fighter character, and even him, you, there's certain things he can do that aren't even combat related. For example, there's an obstacle early on when I don't remember what it was exactly, but it was shooting fireballs, right?
Uh-huh.
You have to get there to hit a switch to get to the next platformer. The wizard and the thief cannot do that because, you know, there's nowhere to jump over it. But you can use the fighter to get across there by using his shield to block the fireballs and move across.
Okay. Because I would imagine that if you didn't, you'd have to jump over the fireballs and stuff, which would be kind of tedious, right?
Right.
Okay. So it allows for kind of experimentation in a way, does it? Or is it just more like, well, you're not going to attempt, you know, something stupid like that because you know that if you try to do that, you're probably going to die?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I think it's, it's experimentation as well.
Okay.
You have to experiment a little bit to see which character works better in the situation.
Uh-huh.
Like, you know, you might think you can solve it with the thief, but in all actuality, you might need the wizard.
Uh-huh. Okay.
It's a very cool game. You know, there are boss battles, there are things like that. I think Trine 2 is an improvement over the original.
Uh-huh.
It also has a co-op mode, which I can see work in that game. Yeah, I kind of complain that, you know, co-op modes get tacked on sometimes.
Well, that's kind of interesting because, like, you know, you don't have to switch between characters. The other person can be one of the characters, and then you guys can just kind of traverse, you know, like the whole, you know, whole sections and stuff together, which didn't the first, like, game have that too?
I don't think so. It's been a while since I played the first game.
All right.
I don't think it did. But it, you know, it still had that element. I think this is a much more refined game, like the puzzles.
Okay.
Like in the first game, it felt, some of the puzzles felt a little tacked on at times,
uh-huh,
but in this one, it feels more natural.
Right.
Like it fits in the world, you know? It doesn't feel like, you know, just putting in there as filler just feels, you know, organic. So.
That's cool. Well, did you, so if I was interested in this game, which I obviously am, do I need to play the first game or do they do some sort of recapitulation of like what happened in a previous game before you start the second game?
Well, it's not like that's the thing. The game is based off of dialogue.
Uh-huh.
They'll just, the basic story is essentially in the first game they ran into this item called the Trine.
Uh-huh.
And that's why they can switch amongst each other.
Okay.
A magical item. in the second game, it just says, oh, they saved the world once, that's it. You don't, you know. And then it seems like, oh, they're going to go on another adventure.
Uh-huh.
That's the basic story. Now, there's some, like, character development, like, you know, the thief, you know, it's known that she's pretty greedy, so she'll always bug for money. The characters kind of banter each other.
Right.
The wizards, you know, he's always worried about his, you know, kids and his wife always being pissed off at him, uh-huh. and the guard's kind of a dumbass, so...
Oh, wow.
So there's a lot of bantering between these characters, kind of, you know, this nice conflicting, you know, personalities going on, too, and you'll hear... So it adds a lot of flavor to it, and it has a nice British feel to it as well, too.
Okay, so it's not really story, like, kind of focused.
No, okay. But it's very immersive. Like, the art design, you feel like you're going through a really basic adventure, and that's the point of the game.
Okay.
It's not like, you know, something story heavy, like, you know, like maybe a Mass Effect or a Tales game or something like that. It's more of a... It is a lot more of a just a basic adventure.
Yeah, well, that's cool. Like, that's and how much is it regularly for the people who might be interested?
$15, I think.
Okay, that's not too bad.
I think it's $15.
Okay. Well, either way, like, it sounds like a cool game. I'm gonna have to check it out whenever I have the time because, of course, we are fast approaching the summer.
Yay. Yeah, you might want to just download it now, though, before it disappears.
Yeah, that's probably what I'm going to do. Probably, like, after this podcast, I'm just going to turn on my PS3, set it to download, and just turn it off.
Yeah.
So what else have you been playing?
Okay. Street Fighter 2 Turbo HD Remix,
wait,
whatever.
What?
I beat it. So I beat it with Ryu.
Yay.
Yay. It's a pretty good game.
Yeah.
It's a pretty good...
Did you play it in remix? Like, I think the only way to play it is in, like, the remix rules, right? I forgot, yeah, like, how it is and stuff.
You can play in original mode, which has the original...
Yeah.
...rules, or balances and fixes and whatever.
Right.
I will say this about the game. There's this odd feature where it's called original sprites. So what'll happen is they'll bring the original, like, sprites for, like, the characters, but keep the background as the brand new... background. It's so weird.
That's weird.
It's funny.
Well, I don't know, like, I although I did get that game, I still kind of like the idea behind the Street Fighter collection better, the 25th anniversary, I think it's called, where you can fight different versions of Ryu, like, over time and stuff. I thought that was pretty nifty.
Yeah, I it's kind of like, remember, a few weeks back we were talking about Darkstalkers,
uh-huh.
and the Chaos Tower game.
Yeah.
And it you know, that seemed like it was the same thing.
Yeah.
As the Street Fighter collection.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, it's pretty neat. Like, that's cool that you finally finished it and stuff. Did you beat it on expert?
No, I beat it on normal. Oh. But you know, I like the new art design, which is from the guys who make the Street Fighter comic.
Like Udon and stuff?
Yeah. Okay. I like the art design. I like, you know, I just liked it. I thought it was pretty cool.
That's kind of random to be playing, like, you know, in the middle of the week and stuff. Be like, you know what? I'm going to pop in Super Street Fighter 2 Turbo HD Remix. I'm like, what?
Well, I've got it both on Xbox and PSN, so.
Wow, that's hardcore.
That's pretty hard. Well, PSN, it was free.
Yes, it was, once. Yeah.
So I just got it.
Jeez.
You know, I want to say something. I was thinking about this and... You know, Xbox Live and, you know, the Gold membership and the PlayStation Plus. I kind of like... The thing about PlayStation Plus I like about it is just that it feels like, you know, you pay your year fee or whatever, right?
Yeah.
It feels like, you know, that you get some sort of incentive.
It seems like you get a lot more out of the PlayStation Plus than you do with the Xbox. Like I'm paying, you know, like, what, $60 a year for Xbox Live for the privilege to do online, which, by the way, they have a really good and robust online service. But, you know, and of course, in the PlayStation, it's kind of a hit or miss depending on the services and stuff. But, like, you don't get more games to play on Xbox Live. Like, you know, for example, like they, like back in the day, they would basically bundle a bunch of games and they'll say like, well, you get this one game for free. But they kind of stopped doing that with the spring promotion and stuff of their games. They just basically said, well, here are the games for our spring promotion. Yay. And no free games if you buy all of them. Curious.
Yeah. Yeah, that's bullshit. And then if you want to go further into that situation, you know, with Xbox Live, I think it's bullshit that you need gold to watch HBO Go, which you already pay for. You need gold to pay to play Netflix,
yeah,
which you already pay for. I don't like that.
Yeah, I mean, not a lot of people do, but I think that, you know, it's just, I think the thing is, you need to provide a more compelling service in order to make the, you know, I guess the value proposition makes sense. And in which case, the console experience makes sense. And I guess that's what Microsoft was trying to take advantage of. Because, I mean, let's face it, even PlayStation Network, you know, is kind of needs, you know, some overhaul of some sort.
Oh, it does. But I think with the PlayStation Plus service, what I like about it is it's like a bonus. It's not necessarily, you know, permission to play online. Or to use Netflix. You don't need it for all that.
Right.
It's just like a bonus service, which is nice, you know? And they always offer free games. And I'll be honest, they don't just offer one game. Sometimes they offer like six different games.
Yep.
Like this month, they offered like, you know, Symphony of the Night for free too. I mean, you know, if you haven't played that game, go play it.
I mean, you know, PlayStation. I mean, heaven forbid, I need a seventh copy of Symphony of the Night. Yes, give me all of them.
But still, though, the games they offer are quality for the most part.
For the most part, yeah,
they do offer a lot of good stuff. I mean, there's, you know, times when there's some crap stuff, obviously.
I mean, for the past few months or so, I've gotten Far Cry 2 full price game, free. You know, PS3 game, not like, you know, not like a chunk of it. It's the whole game for free. And I also got Tomb Raider Underworld, which is not a bad Tomb Raider game.
I didn't like it.
It's not bad. It's not good either. I'm just saying, it's, you know, but you got that for free.
Right.
You know, as opposed to like, you know, going to a store and paying like $5 or $10 for it, you actually get it for free. So you can kind of experience it without, you know, any sort of hesitation. I mean, it's, again, it's free. It's kind of like the same thing with the way that you experienced Awesome Knots. It's free, but it sucks, but it's free. You know, so yeah, I agree with you for the most part. And we should probably revisit this later when we talk about the news and stuff. But
okay,
do you have any other stuff that you've been playing other than, of course, Tales of Graces F?
Yeah, well, I will say one thing about it. That game is in full-blown sci-fi now. Full-blown. Holy shit.
As my best friend would say it, full-blown up-the-ass sci-fi.
Yeah, it's a sci-fi. I think that's a pretty cool... I think that's a cool... a cool move for them to do that, to, you know, mix things up quite a bit.
Okay.
I mean, most Tales games are fantasy based, but in this case, it's science fiction. You know, Alex?
Yeah, yeah.
And that's a good thing. And I didn't see it coming.
Yeah, I don't know. Like I'm not too keen on JRPGs going to the sci-fi realm too much. Just because, like, I like the medieval and kind of steampunky, that's okay, you know, like, as far as technology goes. But as far as technology goes and stuff, like, I like it if there's some hints of, like, the old technology.
Oh, there is. The way they do it is kind of, you know, the initial story is, you know, it starts off as a medieval fantasy.
So is this like, you know, technology, you know, like technology is like powered by magic or something like that?
No, what happens is there's, okay, it starts out medieval and it pretty much still remains medieval in a lot of ways. Kind of that typical, you know, JRPG fantasy thing going on.
Right.
But as the story progresses, you start finding hidden... It's kind of like they did with Phantasy Star, I guess, would be the best example.
Oh, okay.
Because Phantasy Star kind of had this, you know, medieval thing going on, and then it's kind of like hidden technologies, like the hidden history of the world.
I see. Okay.
And that's how it starts. But no, it still has a... It's still medieval.
Uh-huh.
And it still retains, you know, characters still have magic.
Uh-huh.
They still cast spells. You know, there's still that fantasy element. It's just the main story is sci-fi based.
Mm-hmm.
So,
okay.
I mean, it's pretty interesting. I think the storyline's very intriguing.
Okay. That's cool.
So, yeah. I hope you're not too skeptical of it now.
No, I'm just not. It's just not that I'm not that skeptical about it. I'm just experiencing what I've called RPG fatigue. Not just JRPG fatigue, RPG fatigue.
Oh, yes, RPG fatigue. Yes.
Yes.
Even, I take it you haven't played The Witcher.
Not at all. Not this week.
Okay. Well, let's talk about that then. Let's talk about what you've been playing then.
Okay, so it's been kind of like a mixed bag as far as like the games that I've been playing. But the one game that I've been playing like really obsessively for like the past week or so is Plants vs. Zombies.
Aha.
Yeah, and that actually got released during the time when we had our first podcast.
Games and Me.
Yeah, which is like years ago. Years. So it was like, so it's kind of funny that about, you know, 4 or 5 years later, or however long it was, 4 years later, I suppose, that I'm playing the game again, this time on either my iPad or my iPhone, in which case my primary platform of choice is the iPhone. And what can I say? The game stands the test of time. It's only been about 4 years, and I feel like it's a game that's going to last for a while. And I've only really liked two kinds of really three tower defense games. Kingdom Rush, which is on the iPad. This game called Field Runners on the iOS, and of course, you know, other platforms. And of course, this. And I think the reason why I like this a lot is that there's a lot of variety to the weaponry, and there's a lot of creativity actually put in when it comes to the zombies and stuff. And I know that we were talking about, like, zombies last week with, like, Walking Dead, but this is a different kind of zombie. It's like a whimsical side of zombies, I suppose, which, you know, you wouldn't think, like, you know, like, somebody could pull it off and stuff. I mean, that's, you know, that we're talking about, like, you know, like, oh yeah, you know this pea shooter basically like decapitated the zombie and stuff, but it's okay. It's like an E-rated game basically, and it's okay for zombies to get decapitated and whatnot. I'm like, what? You know, like I don't think Mortal Kombat could get to this point of you know, like, I don't know,
a whimsical parody. Mortal Kombat.
A whimsical Mortal Kombat would be hilarious, I think. Although they did try Puzzle Combat, I think.
For, yeah, like, I remember that
several years ago.
With super deformed Mortal Kombat characters.
Yeah, and then Combat Chess. I remember that. It's it's basically Battle Chess,
or the Kart Racer.
Yeah, the Kart Racer. It's you know, it's ridiculous. But
at least they didn't make those separate games.
No. I mean, that's the thing with NetherRealm, right? They're always kind of like trying to add value to it. I mean, it all started all the way back in Mortal Kombat 2, where you play Pong after your 50th, you know, consecutive win.
Jesus. Okay.
You didn't know that?
No.
Yeah, because it's also, I think it was your 50th consecutive win. You also get to fight, I think you get to fight somebody, I think Noob or something. But also there's a way to play Pong on Mortal Kombat 2 for the arcade.
Oh, shit.
Yep. So that is a fact. You guys should check it out.
So back to Plants vs. Zombies.
Uh huh.
What do you think? You know, you really like that game, obviously. So I was gonna say, you know, PopCap's not a bad game developer.
They're not. And the thing is, like, it's funny because they're still actively like kind of promoting this. I mean, Jeff Green, who was, you know, formerly from 1UP.com, he works for them now, and his avatar is basically a zombified version of himself. And I'm, you know, done in the Plants vs. Zombies style, which is surprising, you know? Like, I guess that's one of the things that I really appreciate about PopCap. They're not just going to make a game to release. They'll make it and cultivate the community around it, and then release a new one based off of demand, you know? And
Yeah, because in all honesty, let's be honest, these aren't like, you know, 60-hour RPG epics.
But it could be. I mean, potentially. Like, you know, like the strategy of Plants vs. Zombies is fairly simplistic for the first three worlds and stuff like that. But then the fourth area, you know, which happens because the way that it, because the story goes, and there is kind of a mild story to it, the zombies are trying to invade your house. And what you're trying to do is you have plants that basically you plant down and, you know, you use them to defend your house from the zombies. You have pea shooters, you have sunflowers, which generate sun. Of course, there's sun, and sun is basically your primary currency to buy like new plants and stuff. And which is kind of, you know, neat if you think about it, you know, just the idea of sunlight powering plants and purchasing plants and whatnot. And you get a huge variety of plants. Like, I first thought that when I first played the game, it's just going to be the sunflower, the pea shooter, and then the walnut, which, of course, since it's called walnut, it's basically a wall. You know, they like their puns too, which is great. But there's like maybe, shoot, I don't even know how many they have. Like, they introduce so many weapons as the game progresses. Like, you know, there's like evening levels where, you know, you put down mushrooms that basically grow over time that basically give you more sun and stuff. And it's there's a lot of depth and complexity to the gameplay and stuff. And it's funny because it's limited by how many slots that you can utilize, which you can purchase more, of course, but also the type of weaponry and the kind of zombies that they throw at you. And the zombies are like really creative. Like there's a zombie called the Zomboni, and I don't know if you watch hockey at all.
Oh shit. No, I don't watch hockey.
The Zambonis are basically these little huge things that basically like go around the rink and stuff and actually kind of, you know, clean the ice and stuff like that. So basically like one of the zombies will ride on a Zamboni, and then, you know, you have to kill him like really fast because he'll actually run over all your plants. And so like when that happens, like there's like a plant that basically is literally like a spike strip that you put on one of them, and then if he runs over it, he basically like dies and stuff like that, because of course the vehicle breaks. But what happens is he lays down track for, you know, for these kind of ice guys and stuff, like skating guys. And what happens is the length of their travel is dependent on how far the Zamboni actually traveled. So you have to kill the Zamboni right away so that he won't be able to lay like more ice on the ground. And mind you, if there's ice on that ground, you can't plant anything on there.
God damn.
And that's just a sample of like how complicated things are. There's also flying zombies, swimming zombies.
Jesus.
You know, it gets really funny and ridiculous. There's even like a zombie that rides on a dolphin, which he can basically like jump over walls. And I'm like, what?
I think after this, I'm going to get on my Vita and play it.
It's pretty addicting. And again, like, there's a lot of different kinds of plants. So, for example, there's zombies that actually hold screen doors. And you can't shoot them with, like, a pea shooter because the peas will just bounce off. But you have these big mushroom guys and small mushroom guys who spit out water. And that actually goes through screen doors just fine. And it just so happens that water can actually kill zombies just as effectively as pea shooters. So
what a ridiculous game, but awesome.
It is. It's so awesome. There's so many different things. Like you have a cactus that basically, you know, basically extends itself to hit, you know, flying zombies on balloons. You basically have like what used to be the Michael Jackson zombie. Now they changed it into kind of like a disco, like John Travolta zombie. And what he does is he basically like moonwalks into the level, right? And then he raises his finger up in the air, points up in the air, and summons four zombies around him, just like Moonwalker.
Nice.
And of course, you know, they all dance and move forward, and of course you have to kill those freaks. You know, and he'll summon a zombie every single time if you don't kill him right away. So you just got to kill him right away. But there's definitely a lot of creativity when it comes to that. And it leads to like a really weird, you know, like strategy paradigm. Like there are pea shooters that can shoot on three different lanes. And it's very, you know, it's very easy to kind of get into. You know, I feel that one of the things that a lot of kind of tower defense games lack is the ease of learning, you know, the kind of game mechanics that is required for you to enjoy the game. Like, they will kill you within literally like two or three rounds of the game. And by
Final Fantasy Crystal Chronicles, I'm looking right at you.
Crystal Chronicles or Crystal Defenders?
Crystal Defenders, excuse me.
Yeah, that happens to me a lot in Crystal Defenders.
It's a good game, but it's just ridiculous. It gets overwhelming.
Yeah, it's very creative. It's very well done. But I don't think they give you like the balancing of like the cost of each of the classes that you can put down is not that balanced. It's going off of the kind of, you know, like desktop tower defense idea of, well, you know, here's what you have and you gotta work with it and stuff. And I appreciate games more that kind of ease you in and stuff as far as these games are concerned, into the gameplay and stuff, so that you'll be able to know like what's going on,
right?
You know, and I mean, it's enough that it's, you know, it's a good strategy game, but they also have different mini games that you can unlock too. And you unlock those the more you progress. Like, you have, like, kind of like a bowling game, you know, with the walnuts and stuff. So, basically, right, the zombies will walk down the, you know, the lawn and stuff. And you just, like, roll down the walnut and it'll bounce around like the zombies and stuff. And there's also a section of it where it's kind of like a puzzle. So you're kind of trying to figure out, like, how to clear all the zombies and stuff using the weapons they give you. And of course there's also Whack-a-Zombie, which is very intriguing and stuff in itself. So it was just exactly what you would think it is. It's basically whack-a-mole with the zombies in the game and stuff. And I mean, that's all I can really talk about it. I mean, there's a lot of, I don't want to kind of spoil the other zombie varieties because they're just way too hilarious, but it's enough strategy to last you for hours and hours and hours. And I am playing it on the go. So I would probably recommend playing it on the go. But if you want to hunker down and like play it and stuff, like, you know, be my guest too, because I think it's one of the best, like, you know, PopCap games out there. And I think I would have to say that it's probably my favorite.
PopCap games are, you know, the thing about PopCap games is there's two things they do right. They make them they give them a lot of depth.
Yeah.
And they really do, even stuff like Peggle. And then the other thing too is they have a very arcade like feel.
Yeah.
Which is nice. I am an advocate for PopCap games because they have that casual feel. Some people just list them as casual, but they can be extremely deep games, all of them.
Yeah.
A lot of them. And then, you know, to me, this is why I hate Angry Birds, because PopCap games, they know how to nail this casual, you know, because there's a lot of hardcore gamers who do play PopCap games.
Uh-huh.
They nail all their mechanics for the most part in their games.
Yeah, I'm wondering what the secret sauce is.
Every single, huh?
I'm wondering what their secret sauce is, like, you know, how they figure these things out, because like I said, like, they don't release games like every year or so. Like, the we see iterations of their games, their properties on different platforms. That's all they do. And they don't do it at launch too. They just basically say, oh, well, you know, now the PS Vita might need like Plants vs. Zombies, so let's release it there. They don't make like, you know, they don't release a new game every year. So like, for example, they're not like, oh, let's release Plants vs. Zombies 2 now or something. You know, they take their time sometimes.
That's probably why, you know, it's not like trash like Angry Birds, I'm sorry, but you know that they just pump up a new version every year with like, for example, Zuma. I was doing some research. The original Zuma was released in 2003.
Uh-huh.
We didn't get a sequel till 7 years later.
Yep.
To that game.
Mm-hmm.
So who knows when we'll see a sequel to fucking Plants vs. Zombies.
And it's easy to forget that PopCap has been purchased by EA. And, you know, EA's been doing a really good job just letting PopCap do whatever they want, you know?
Unlike BioWare, but
oh, it's like that's like a sore subject nowadays. It's like, oh, unlike BioWare.
You know, like I said, I don't hate BioWare. If you want to hear my feelings on it, go watch the last episode or listen to the last episode. Uh-huh. Because I basically explained the whole, you know, Square Enix Atlas type of thing going on, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, but we won't get into that. What I'm saying, though, is PopCap makes pretty damn good games.
Yes, they do. So let's see. What else have I been playing? Oh, excuse me.
Not The Witcher.
Not The Witcher. No, definitely not. Not Xenoblade Chronicles. Here's the thing. This is something new. I discovered how to play one of my favorite all-time games on my Mac. Mind you, this is only available on the PC, but I am playing it on my Mac. Like, not right now, but I was able to play it on my Mac, like, the other day, and I just raised my hand, and I was like, hallelujah! Oh, my God! I'm able to play this game again. It's been, like, almost more, like, slightly more than a decade since I've played this game.
What game?
Roller Coaster Tycoon 2.
Oh, yeah, you've talked about that.
Yeah, well, I didn't talk about it at length, you know, I think on the show at all. And I've been trying to get this game, you know, for a long time. I bought the Amazon version, but Amazon has some stupid DRM wrapper around it. So you'll have to run, like, some sort of, like, you know, Amazon app on Windows, which I'm like, I don't have Windows. I have a Mac. What the hell did you sell me this for, you know? So I recently got, like, a, you know, a $5 version of it from somebody, you know, like, complete, like, the PC box and everything, and found out and kind of, you know, recalled by opening the box that the only thing that was in the box was just a disc.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, speaking of people complaining about, like, you know, no more manuals in video games, PC games haven't been doing it in a while.
Oh, shit. Well, I bet it was a CD-ROM.
Yeah, it was a CD-ROM.
A CD-ROM, not a DVD-ROM, a CD-ROM.
Not a DVD-ROM, is totally a CD-ROM. So, okay, so I got that, and I went to the site called PortingTeam.com, and what they do is they specialize in porting PC games, creating things like called wrappers and allowing you to play those games on your Mac. Now, what the hell are wrappers? Well, wrappers are basically these kinds of programs that are inherently packages or zip files that contain other programs inside. And what they do is they simulate a Windows environment by having certain DLLs and stuff from Windows there and certain programs that are, you know, and this is all like open source and it's not, you know, illegal in any way. So basically they wrap the game around, you know, they what they do is once you install the game, they simulate a Windows environment the entire time. And when you run the game, they basically simulate a Windows window. It's almost like simulating a Windows desktop. And, you know, it's you know what it is? It's like you have pockets of different Windows desktops on your Mac desktop.
Right.
And so you can run Roller Coaster Tycoon 2, you can run Skyrim, which they do have a wrapper for. You can get Skyrim and actually run it on your Mac with that wrapper, and it'll be fine. And a whole bunch of other games too. Because the way that I got into this was I got into this via Gabriel Knight, Sins of the Fathers, and Gabriel Knight, The Beast Within. They were contained in wrappers that allowed me to play them on my Mac. And of course, they're full screen, but you can change them so that they can be windowed and stuff. You can simulate a Windows environment on there with the start menu and everything. It's really, really neat. And, you know, I popped in Roller Coaster Tycoon 2, and, you know, it's interesting because for a isometric game, you know, like the 45-degree angle view, it's a very in-depth simulation game with full working physics and a very deep construction system that we just haven't seen in any sort of, like, you know, Roller Coaster Tycoon or any sort of theme park-ish type game right after that. Roller Coaster Tycoon 3 attempted to do something like this, but which they had a neat feature in all these games, Anthony. Like, all these games had the ability to actually import old roller coasters from previous games so you can play them in a new game.
Ah, nice. So that game's, like, kind of ahead of its time then.
Oh, absolutely. And even when they released Part 3, which is in full 3D, you can actually import the your roller coasters from Part 1 or 2 into it. And actually, since now Roller Coaster Tycoon 3 is in 3D, you can actually ride your roller coasters finally.
Right.
Yeah. The big problem with Roller Coaster Tycoon 3, though, the physics are not the same. So some of your roller coasters will just stop in the middle of the track.
I've never played Roller Coaster Tycoon.
It's very addicting of a game because, you know, if you like theme parks or going to theme parks and stuff, it kind of gives you a kind of very general overview of how you run a theme park. Like, what are the costs of it? Like, you know, how many people should you hire sweeping like the floors and stuff, or doing the lawn, or actually entertaining people for lines and stuff? Like, because they have entertainers, they'll walk around the theme park, make people happy and stuff. Maybe they'll even make your wait in line a little bit more pleasant. You can even install TVs on queues so that people have something to watch while they're in queue. Because it's what's interesting about this game too, that's kind of also way ahead of its time, is that every single individual person in this game is actually named, and you can name them and stuff, and you can actually stalk them and track them throughout their entire stay at the park and see how much they spend. So it goes into a very micro and macro economics of how theme parks work. And there's been a lot of really good theme parks out there that's been created just for this game. And I have to say that there's still a community for this game out there of people just actively making roller coasters, people actively making theme parks, and in some cases, recreating full theme parks. Like, I remember in Roller Coaster Tycoon 1, some dude actually recreated all of Disneyland.
Holy shit.
All of it.
Have you played the Disneyland one?
No, not yet. But I will download it at some point. The track,
considering you're an expert on Disneyland, you could see how accurate it really is.
I've seen it, and yeah, it's pretty accurate. It really is. I mean, you know, and what's cool about Roller Coaster Tycoon 2 that's different from 1 or 3 is that it licensed five Six Flags theme parks.
Right.
So meaning, you know, like, we have Six Flags Magic Mountain here, which is arguably the best out of all the Six Flags. It actually has it there playable. And, huh. And ironically, this was back in, like, let me see when this was released, okay? This was released in, I'm like looking at the box right now. It's by Infogrames, so it kind of tells you like how old this game is.
Infogrames, I remember that company.
Yeah,
they're not even around, are they?
No, they used to. They turned into Atari. Remember, like, they collapsed their company into Atari. Okay, so this was 2002. Okay,
damn,
and it still holds up. Like, it's really good game. Now here's the thing. How ironic is it that right now Six Flags is in dire straits and almost in bankruptcy, and back in 2002, about 10 years ago, they had a simulation where you have to run their theme parks, and when you start the theme parks, they were already in dire straits.
Oh, shit, that's insane.
Yeah, it's like, you know, like art imitating life, you know? Like, literally within months and stuff and years, you'd find that Magic Mountain would be bankrupt, and you're like, and you have to take out a loan, and now you have to figure out like how to do it and stuff. And then over time, like, you know, the value of each roller coaster depreciates because, of course, like, the quality of the ride, it starts breaking down a lot just because of the way that it is over time. It just becomes more expensive to maintain. It's some really interesting and deep stuff that I really appreciate. And, you know, I only like really like a few simulation games out there. You know, I like Populous. I liked, you know, Roller Coaster Tycoon 1 and 2. And I like, of course, you know, Sim Tower and Utes Tower. But Roller Coaster Tycoon 2 is definitely something that I, you know, that's close to my heart. Because I lived in the Philippines. We didn't have theme parks there for a long time. And, you know, like, I just like going on roller coasters and, you know, and themed attractions. So this is right up my alley.
Right. Well, that's probably why you like it.
Yeah. Well, that's just, of course, the hook. But the other part, of course, is the simulation aspect.
Which it's a good game.
It is just, you know, it's an award-winning game. It's generally like just a good fun game to play. And you can lose yourself for hours in this game.
And what about the rest of the series?
Three. Well, they have expansions for two. And they also have expansions for one. As far as the third game, I would not recommend it, even though it's on the Mac, just because it's by Aspyr, and Aspyr isn't really known for maintaining their games too well. It's a just much richer experience to watch it and kind of play it on, you know, like the original, like the 2D ones. And it's not me being like an elitist saying, oh, 2D is better for this, but there's just some stuff in the 3D one that they weren't able to capture, you know, from the 2D games, like the amount of detail, the how sprawling the park is, how many people there are in the park and stuff. It's just, you know, it's a different experience. And I really recommend like the you doing part one or part two and getting the expansions, because they're really great. They're really excellent games.
Yeah, it seems like it's a... Before we, you know, go on or whatever, I will say this. My movie theater actually, and I think it is, I could be wrong, think it's the Roller Coaster Tycoon pinball game.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Although I think the flippers are messed up. There's some response issues, it seems.
Oh, that sucks.
So, I don't know.
But that's different, though, from, like, you know, obviously, the simulation game and stuff. And I know you're not too keen on simulation games, but, you know, like, if you have a chance, like, and time, of course, because that's important, you know, try it out, check it out for, like, about a bit or two, just see how it works. Because they have different scenarios for different parks, and so they have fictional parks, and, of course, the Six Flags theme parks for Roller Coaster Tycoon 2. And also, you can make your own sandbox. You can do the terrain yourself and stuff. It's definitely one of my favorite games of all time. It's really addicting.
I do remember in SimCity, one of the versions of SimCities I played, you could like destroy the cities with monsters. Oh, yeah, that's how I used to amuse myself in that game.
You can do that for all of them.
Oh, well, I'll do that then.
SimCity Societies, which I think is coming out next year. I think it's called Societies. No. Societies was the previous one that they released. Next year is SimCity. They don't have like a name for it. It's just called SimCity.
Might be like a reboot type of thing.
It looks like it's a reboot, but they're introducing something really interesting, which is multiplayer.
Oh.
Like multiplayer in a simulation game? That's interesting.
Now, I don't know about this multiplayer sometimes.
Well, I think it's more co-op than it is like deathmatch.
So, deathmatch.
You know, deathmatch where you just launch like freaking like Godzillas left and right and stuff, destroying like towns and shit.
Oh, shit. Yeah.
But anyways, there was one game that I started playing last night that I will talk about. And is... on Twitter I said like I wasn't going to pick up, you know, Diablo 3, that I'm picking up Max Payne 3 instead. There's a reason for that. It's most likely because of this game. Can you guess what it is?
No.
Torchlight 2.
Oh.
I got into the beta.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. And mind you, it's a PC-only beta. So guess what I did?
You wrapped around...
Yeah, I used a wrapper. I installed it on my Mac, and I was able to play it. Yay!
Yay!
And guess what? When it releases, it's $20. And it's just as good as Diablo.
If not better.
One of the things that I really liked about this game is, you know how you played the first one, correct?
Yeah, I liked the first one.
Yeah? Like, what did you like about it?
Just how whimsical. Like, my problem with Diablo was that it took itself too seriously.
Yeah.
And, you know, like you go talk to NPC. Like, I don't know what it was trying to do. It took itself so dark and seriously, but it was like the characters were so one-dimensional.
Uh-huh.
So, I mean, it lacked depth.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
In terms of... Yeah, like, you had this, you know, all, you know, like, you know, you had torture chambers with people being ripped apart, but yet the characters were one-dimensional, so why the fuck should I care about saving your ass?
Yeah, I think for a dungeon crawler, I think it lends itself if there's a little bit more whimsy to it, like it's a little bit more color and stuff. I think that Diablo has a fantastic setting and a motif and stuff that just won't be matched by any sort of dungeon crawler, in my opinion. But Torchlight 2 is in a different league because I think that they do try to really, you know, make the game a lot more fun than just, you know, going through dungeons and stuff like that. And mind you, this is a multiplayer beta, so I was actually forced to make my own server. If anybody wants to find it, it's called Querida in Spanish. And I think it's spelled like Q-U-E-R-I-D-A. If you're in the, you know, right, the multiplayer beta, I mean, I can set that up. But, you know, I don't play it. I'm not going to play it a lot and stuff. It's just for me. It's just for me to try the single player content or multi single player quote unquote content. But from my play of it, what's one of the biggest complaints about the previous game is that you cannot customize your characters. You can, right, you can now.
Yay.
So it's very minor. You just change the face, and both the face and the actual color of the character, like, you know, skin color changes. Very minor. You can change the hair. That's basically it. You can change the gender, which is, you know, obviously a plus from the previous game. But what I really like, though, and I don't remember if this was in the first game. Well, it was in the first game, but in a very kind of low level, because you can pick from a myriad of pets now. So in the first game, there was like a cat and a dog, right? But I think that in this particular sense, like, they actually have, like, from the beta, I have 8 different animals that I can pick from. So I have, like, I think an eagle is one of them, a panther, a dog, a cat, even a ferret, of all things.
There was, like, 3 of them in the original, I think.
Really?
Yeah, I think, like, just 3.
Okay. But yeah,
I think
it's weird because it's like you can play with, you know, a ferret as your pet. And it's like, what kind of battle engagement would the pet, like, do and stuff? But not only that, you could also change the appearance of your pet. And, of course, name them as with the first game. And so far, though, from what I've played, it's pretty much like the first Torchlight, which is not a bad thing. For a $20 game, I wouldn't expect anything less than that.
What's interesting about Torchlight, if you want to go further, remember, Torchlight is kind of a descendant of an older game called Fate.
Is it?
Yeah. Yeah, it's from the same developers. Fate had a lot of elements that were in Torchlight.
So what's the difference between the two then? Because, I'm not familiar with Fate, so...
Okay, so... let's see, I'm trying to think. Because it's even been longer since I've played Fate.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so Runic Games, of course, obviously developed it.
And, of course, a lot of people from Runic were ex-Blizzard North guys. And, you know, they were developing a version of Diablo 3 at some point until, of course, Blizzard completely dissolved the company.
Yeah, well, I'm looking up some of this info. But, one of the things in Fate that I remember, and I think it was I could be wrong, there's also another game they were involved called Mythos.
I don't recall.
But with Fate, what was unique about Fate was I remember having a pet feature, but and that it was even more limiting than it was in Torchlight 1.
Okay.
Because I think it was just a dog or something, and it was pretty generic.
Okay.
So. Okay, here it was. So Fate was released back in 2005.
It's by Runic, though?
No, it's not by Runic. It's actually one of the... It was the guy... I think one of the head developers of Runic, uh-huh, he developed Fate.
Oh, okay.
And there's a lot of elements from Fate. For example, pets.
Mm-hmm.
Pets and fishing. And you can either choose between a dog or a cat in that one.
You know, it's interesting. I think I remember this game. I think I actually had, like, a whole bunch of friends, like, playing this at the time, too, and really swore by the game. And I'm looking at a screenshot of it, and even, like, the level up button is straight up like Diablo.
You know? Yeah. Yeah, a lot of it is straight up. It did have a unique feature, though. Fate did. It was called Retirement.
I think I remember this, yeah. But go ahead.
Okay, so if you complete the main game or the quest, you are given the option to retire the current player. Mm-hmm. And then what happens is you start play with the descendant of that character.
Right.
The descendant gets various perks and bonuses, including one item that is hand down from its ancestor. If this family heirloom has any magical enhancements on it, they will be augmented by 25% every time the item is passed down.
Wow.
If a weapon or piece of armor is passed down, its damage done or defensive capabilities will be increased as well. If a player chooses not to retire, they can advance their characters and go as deep into the dungeon as they like.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, Fate, you know, was kind of the descendant, the ancestor of Torchlight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's really cool, too. And it's like, it's just... You mean ancestor?
No, ancestor. Like it was the precursor.
Yeah. So yeah, and it's really weird that they're, you know, that they're doing this now, and I think that, you know, for the better, I think they've actually done a really good job of, you know, kind of capturing the feel of Diablo, but at the same time, kind of really differentiating themselves from that brand, like dramatically, you know.
Yeah.
And because I mean, obviously, like with Fate, they kind of fulfilled the void of like not having a Diablo game for like a decade, right? And now what they're actually doing is because of the cost of the game, you know, I mean, it's $20. Like, what are you gonna be like? I know that there's a lot of hardcore Diablo fans out there, but if you're like a new to the genre and stuff, what are you gonna pick, a $20 game or a $60 game? I mean, it's gonna be. You know, it's going to be either or, but I would, you know, I'm pretty sure, like, a lot of people would probably, like, try out, like, the Torchlight series and stuff.
Fuck, you could buy the original for $15 on Xbox Live.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, that would be something that would be really cool for them to see is kind of, you know, we're talking about PopCap a little bit ago. Like, if they adopted that model of just porting over, like, you know, like, their games, you know, just to buy time... to other platforms, because I bet you that the way that PopCap is making their money is because they keep porting it to other platforms and people keep buying them, so that's how they're funding their projects.
It's too bad that Torchlight only got ported to the Xbox 360.
Yeah, it's unfortunate, but it is a good port.
It is a good port, yes. I'm not saying, you know, anything against the 360, it's just I think it should have been more widespread.
Yeah, I agree.
Even the Vita port.
Mm-hmm.
I can see a Vita port of this game.
I mean, oh my gosh, if they released this on the iPad, I'd be so happy.
And, you know, well, and then you got Dungeon Hunter, though, too, which I do like.
Yeah.
I like the Dungeon Hunter games.
Yeah. So
I think those are good.
Yeah, but, you know, that's all that really I played of Torchlight 2 is I was able to kill some bad guys. I used a class called a Berserker, which is basically the same as the Monk in Diablo 3 in some cases. You know, it's a very major melee class, you know, and really fun to play. Like, just punch some shit down and, you know, you'll get items and stuff. And, you know, I have to play it more. But sadly, like, when I logged online, like, last night at, like, 9 p.m. and stuff, like, the servers were down. And I was like, that sucks. So the beta wasn't running anymore. Like, I missed it or something, so... But, yeah, so that's all what I've been playing so far, and hopefully I get to play more games, like, as the weeks go by, but we are fast approaching E3, and, you know, incidentally, my birthday, so, yeah, so a lot of work has been being put on the website, and, of course, everything else, so, yeah.
It'll be good.
It will be good. It will be awesome.
Summer lull time is coming.
Thank goodness.
Yup, summer lull time. Yeah. So now that we've talked about what we've played, Alex,
yes.
How about the news?
This is our news log segment, and in case you guys don't know, you know, we talk about the news articles and stuff that have come out during the past week or so that are pretty important. You know, right. We're not going to cover everything. We're not other websites.
No.
You know what I mean?
No, and we comment on them.
Yeah, pretty much. But, you know, just to reiterate, if you guys do want to kind of give, you know, ask us for your opinion on, like, a specific news article that came out during the past week or so, you can always email us at partychat@gamerhorizon.com. Again, that's partychat@gamerhorizon.com. So for the first news article, this is actually, people have had very mixed opinions about this. So basically, the Microsoft announced that for $99 and $14.99 a month for 2 years, you get 2 years of Xbox Live Gold and a 4 gigabyte Xbox 360 with Kinect. Now, it's only available via coupon, and of course, it's only available via Microsoft Store. But basically, you know, they have like a premium if you do this for about $40. But yeah, you would get an Xbox. Like, you just walk away with an Xbox, like right then and there.
I don't know. That's a good deal for maybe people who don't have one.
Right. I mean, obviously, like, what do we need? Like, we have like the Xbox and stuff. But the way that I basically, because my friend was kind of complaining about this too. It's like, meh, it's not really worth it for that price because, you know, it's like you'd be paying more. I'm like, but it's only $40 more.
Right.
And you'd be walking away with an Xbox.
And those 2 years of Xbox Live, that's $120 right there.
Yeah, I mean, again, it's a $40 differential. If you want to be specific, it's about $38.99, I think, if my math is correct, you know, which they're getting from you. I mean, honestly, like, if you don't have enough money and you're like maybe somebody straight out of college, you know, this is an easy way for you to get like a, you know, brand new video game system and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
But my question is, though, well, first of all, what do you think about this? Do you think it's a good idea? Is it not? Like, what are your kind of concerns about it?
Don't matter. Can I be quite frank? I think it's good for new people, and quite frankly, I don't care.
Now, here's a question. What if the next Xbox and PlayStation 3 starts at $600, but they have this deal to subsidize it for like $300 or $400 and have like a straight-up plan?
Now,
what do you think about that?
Now, that's a whole other matter. That would hurt sales of the new console.
But what if all of them did it, though?
That would hurt sales of all the new consoles, I guess.
You really think it would?
Well, like, look what happened at the PlayStation 3.
Okay.
This gen, early gen. What really hurt it? That price tag.
Well, the price, but if they do this, like, let's say Sony says, well, you can get the PlayStation 3, right, like 4 right now for like $300 if you sign up for a 2-year plan for PlayStation Plus at X number of dollars a month. Wouldn't that be more reasonable? I mean, you're going to use that service anyway.
Right, right.
So, like, for example, like, let's say, you know, hypothetically, the next Xbox comes out, you know, in, you know, like, next year or 2 years from now, it's $600. And they say for about $300, you can get, you know, for about $300 and about $14.99 a month for 2 years, you get 2 years of Xbox Live and this model of the highest model of the Xbox, you know, and, you know, with a certain amount of differential, like just to subsidize the cost.
Right.
At $300, I think that's still very reasonable. But at the same time, it's not sacrificing, you know, it's not always going to be a kind of a loss leader for them. Because I don't know if you remember this, but every single console in every generation that started for the past decade or so, and a little bit over a decade too, they always lost money every time they released consoles.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, so, I remember there was a point with the Xbox when Microsoft said they weren't making a profit off the Xbox.
Yeah, that was like for the first 2 or 3 years, I'd say.
Yeah.
Yeah, so this is a way for them to kind of say, okay, well, this is really the overall cost of the system, but we want to offer you this added service as well.
Right.
You know, because that's something that, you know, they don't really like. I don't think that it costs too much to maintain the service, really. And if you're going to pay for that service anyway, might as well save for it.
Right.
You know? So that's kind of like how I see this thing. And I think that it'll be interesting to see if they do apply it to the next gen. I mean, it is kind of like a cell phone plan, if you think about it. But that'll allow them to not only make more advanced hardware, but also, you know, figure out a way to help subsidize it in some way for them, so they're not always like bleeding money the first 2 years.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Yeah.
So
in that sense, you agree?
Yeah, I agree. So yeah. What's the next?
The next one is, this is maybe a surprise to some, maybe not. You probably won't care about it. This is pretty incredible and pretty important and kind of says a lot about this community. The subscription base of Star Wars The Old Republic drops from 1.7 million to 1.3 million subscribers, a total loss of 400,000 subscribers.
That's not good.
It's not.
And this was the MMO that was supposed to revolutionize MMOs.
It was supposed to kill, like, World of Warcraft, as what most people say. And it just lost a bunch of people. Now, you know why this happened, right?
Not sure, to be honest.
What would you think happened?
Well, from what I know of the game, it's basically a BioWare game with lots of people in it playing at once. That's what I've heard. It's just structured like any other BioWare game, but with lots of people.
Yeah, it has a great storyline and stuff like that. It is definitely one of the best BioWare games out there. But the main reason why, like, the subscriber base dropped is exactly the reason why World of Warcraft lost all those people to Star Wars The Old Republic. And you know what that is?
What is that?
New MMOs.
Oh, fuck.
Yeah, and this is kind of like inherent to the MMO community. If you notice, every time there's a new MMO out, people leave, like, World of Warcraft, then some of them come back, but some of them stay. Like, you know, that's kind of been proven throughout the history of the MMO genre over the past few years. In this particular case, there's a beta for The Secret World that's out, which is, you know, like, the guys who made The Longest Journey. They're building that game.
Right.
There's also a beta for Guild Wars 2 that's out. And we've talked about Guild Wars 2 before. And, you know, and those are two really kind of advanced games. And, of course, you know, like, notwithstanding Elder Scrolls MMO, they'll probably have a beta for that too. So guess what's going to happen when people move on to The Secret World and Guild Wars 2? They're going to move on to Elder Scrolls MMO.
The numbers are going to decrease.
Yeah, so it's almost like, you know, like, you're spraying a whole bunch of people across these different MMOs with one main one, kind of like the root of everything. And then they all try out and kind of go in the different directions in these different MMOs, and either they stay or they move on to the next one. And that's kind of inherent to, like, the MMO community in some cases. Like, you know, like, they're always interested in exploring new worlds. You know, and once they have a feel of your current world, it's kind of like, well, I've tried that before, so let's move on to such and such, you know? You know, and that's, I think, a big problem in the MMO community.
And you know, it doesn't help when you have all these, you know, random Korean MMOs just popping out of nowhere.
Absolutely.
These free-to-play ones where, you know...
It's segmenting the market.
I don't know about the MMO. I don't like them. You know, it's interesting. It's not that I don't completely uncare about it, but I don't know. I don't think the Old Republic's going to die. I'll be honest with you.
I don't think so either. I think there's a lot of ADD with the MMO community in general in terms of, like, gaming, which is why they move from MMO to MMO. Yeah. You know, they just won't stick with one. But it's also probably the content provider's fault because they're not giving a huge variety of content for people to try to use
right.
for their gaming time, you know? So what that says is there needs to be a shakeup that's going to happen in the MMO community in order to kind of quell this. And honestly, reading up again on, like, Elder Scrolls MMO, and mind you, the guy who is actually building the Elder Scrolls MMO is actually one of the guys who created Dark Age of Camelot, which is why we had all that parallels last week when we talked about it.
Yeah,
a lot of those ideas. I mean, if they've been building this for like 4 or 5 years, they don't seem like the game doesn't seem like a modern MMO to me.
Well, let me ask you this before we go on.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this. Do you think that the shakeup the MMO needs, you know, is going to happen soon? Do you think it's going to happen?
It's difficult because it's a huge time investment and also a cost investment. I'm not sure. Because a lot of these companies go into the MMO business trying to figure out how they can milk, like, X number of subscriptions from their from their subscribers. They're not even talking about like whether a game should be fun or not. For the exception of a few companies, I'm not saying that every single
like the Guild Wars 2 guys. This. Like the
The Guild Wars 2 guys really care about their stuff. Like ArenaNet cares about their stuff. Secret World, they've been in development for that game, like in pre-production since freaking the turn of the century, okay? Oh, I mean that's how old that game is. And that tries something new also. So I think that that's why we're seeing the shift too, is because those two games are trying something new. Like The Secret World, for example, The Secret World is basically, it's classless and it's levelless, which is an interesting idea. Yeah.
Well, the classless idea, I think I've seen that, maybe heard of it before.
Uh-huh.
But not levelless. That's the more intriguing part.
No experience points. No leveling, which is very interesting. So, yeah. So, if I do get a sign up for, you know, the secret world and stuff like that, I'll try it out and we'll talk about it and stuff.
You probably will, knowing you.
Yeah, we'll see.
So, what's the next news?
We have three other news articles. There's actually a fourth one, but check this out, dude. So, you absolutely hate Operation Raccoon City, right?
Right.
You just really don't. What didn't you like about it?
I've explained it before, but it's just a crap game. You know, no hit detection, horrible hit detection. Okay. Very generic.
And you like Street Fighter Cross Tekken over this, correct?
Yes, I do.
I know. I mean, those are both completely different games, but you like it.
Yeah, better, but when right? you punch somebody, your hand doesn't go through them. So
okay. Well, what do you feel when I tell you that Operation Raccoon City sells almost 2 million copies and Street Fighter Cross Tekken only sold 1.4 million copies? And it's actually shy from Capcom's estimates of about Capcom expected to sell both, you know, towards like 2 million. What does that say, do you think?
Oh, it's simple. Shooters sell.
Okay. This is true.
It's that simple.
But it's weird though that there's so much hype with like Street Fighter Cross Tekken that it only sold that much. You know what I mean? Like I almost expected it to sell just as much as like Street Fighter 4. Do you think it's because of consumer like confidence? Did they lose it when they released like Ultimate Marvel vs. Capcom 3? Like within the first few weeks, is it because of the news that the DLC was on there? Like, what do you think?
I don't think any of that mind you. Let's be honest. Most gamers are a vocal majority, are a silent majority.
Okay.
And a lot of them, you'd be surprised, don't look up websites on a regular basis. They just go to, they get their gaming news from GameStop. And what I mean is gaming news as far as new releases.
Right.
So I'm not insulting those people. That's just how they roll. And that's fine.
Yeah.
What it is simply, and it's a simple reason, shooters sell. Now, let's look at what happened when Street Fighter 4 came out back in February 2009.
Mm-hmm.
Were there any big releases that year at that time?
I don't think so.
Okay. Let's also be fair, too. Capcom had a pretty big marketing campaign for Operation Raccoon City. I saw commercials mm-hmm. all over the place for that fucking game. Right. All over, even on TV. They marketed the shit out of that piece of shit. But but let's also keep in mind, that's a shooter.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? When you have a shooter that's marketed as much as maybe a fighting game, which is going to sell more? We're not in the 90s where the fighting game was the big phenomenon. You know, it has revived in popularity. It is considered a major genre again, correct?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
But it's not a shooter. Shooters are kind of the big things right now.
Yeah.
And shooters sell. That's just a fact. Shooters sell. And that mm-hmm. you can't get any more complex than that.
Yeah.
Whether it's a good shooter or not, it don't matter. People will buy a shooter.
Yeah. But it's weird then that Capcom like totally pushed it, you know, like, you know, in terms of marketing and really. Like, I don't know how the marketing is for Street Fighter Cross Tekken, because I don't have TV and stuff. And
I can see anything for that.
Yeah. But I think you're onto something, though, with its release, too. Because not only is Operation Raccoon City out at the same time, but there's also a whole bunch of other titles that came out in March that just really kind of almost buried it in some ways.
Remember, you got to keep one thing in mind. What game came out the same exact day that Street Fighter Cross Tekken came out? What game?
Was it Final Fantasy?
No. Mass Effect 3.
Oh, that's right.
Mass Effect 3 came out the same exact day as Street Fighter X Tekken. Mm-hmm. Cross Tekken, whatever. Came out the same day. So you got to keep that in mind, too.
So did Capcom just kind of just release it to the hounds and had, you know, just got killed and stuff then?
I think what it was... Well, I say 1.4 million isn't bad. I wouldn't say that's bad, but what it is I think Capcom had faith in the fighting community.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what it was, more so than anything else.
Okay.
And let's be honest, it's not a bad game. It's actually one of the best fighters this year.
Yeah, but I know that it's been torn apart by like the fighting game community just because of the balancing and stuff. Like, there's a lot of like, I know for a fact that when I was talking to one of my friends with it and stuff, like, that charge characters are just pretty useless in it a lot of the times because it's a very kind of hands-on game, kind of a rushdown offensive game and stuff. And it's just, you know, and the thing is, here's the thing. The game, you know, had this, like, really cool feature of the gems and whatnot, blah, 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 blah. But no one's going to use them in tournaments. They're all banned. And if that was the way that you would balance Zangief against somebody like, you know, Ryu and stuff, then I'm sorry, but... basically, it's kind of like if you went to war, if two guys, like Deadliest Warriors, right? If you had Genghis Khan versus, like, I don't know, like, Rambo, and you basically tell Rambo that he can't use, like, any weapons at all, and he needs to have, like, you know, his arms tied behind his back.
I see.
You know, it's kind of like you're gimped.
They need to patch it, maybe.
Yeah.
That's the only way I can see them.
Well, they patched it, but still people aren't going to use the gems. So basically, they built like this whole feature, this huge feature that they were hoping people would use, and then it winds up in one of the biggest tournaments in the world, the Evo Championships. No one is using them.
I see.
Yeah.
Well, let's see.
So now it's raw. It's just Street Fighter Cross Tekken, no gems, whatever.
Let's see what happens.
Yeah.
So
okay. So next article. Don't expect a Kid Icarus sequel. So apparently Sakurai. No. This is what Sakurai said. If by Lasting Universe you mean to ask if there's a sequel, the answer is no. Sakurai flatly told IGN. We pushed a lot into the game in order to let people have the short yet deep experience, but the novelty of that would likely grow thin in the next game. For now, my thought is that perhaps we'll see someone else besides me make another Kid Icarus game in another 25 years.
How about you make a Kid Icarus game with an actual good control scheme?
Oh, snap.
Oh, shit. That killed the game for me. I'm sorry. Never played it again.
Wow. Yeah, I haven't touched a game since.
You agree with me. I know you do.
Yeah, I like the game, like some of the stuff that they do in the game, but my God, the control scheme. What the hell? What the hell?
That kills the game. That game was the most disappointing game of this year.
Okay. In an era where touchscreen technology is prevalent and that we're using twin sticks for everything, because we've proven for years now that it's a control scheme that works, why are we going back to the stylus?
Not sure.
Sometimes, like, I question that. Like, I question why the 3DS still has a stylus. Like, what is the point? Like, did we actually use that in Super Mario 3D Land? No.
No, not at all.
So, yeah, I don't get it. And I seriously would laugh my ass off if the Wii U tablet requires a stylus. I would just look at the landscape of tablets here in the United States, the fact that they're, by the way, no longer stylused. You know, and just kind of point in that direction and be like, what are you guys trying to pull here?
Well, let's there's not much we can say on this, because really, if there were to be a sequel, which there isn't, but, you know, make a control scheme that works. Use the Power Pro Stick Duo Plus, whatever Nintendo...
Circle Pad Pro.
Yeah, whatever the fuck Nintendo calls it. And that's it. That's all I gotta say on that.
My question is, why is he saying this? Is it because it was a failure? Did it not sell well?
I thought it sold pretty well. Fuck, there's people still talk about it.
Yeah, but it's like, it makes it sound like that he was kind of, like, from what he sounds like, he's a little bit disappointed with the sales.
I don't know.
You know, because that's the thing, it's like, kind of like, this kind of goes with the Street Fighter Cross Tekken article that we talked about. You know, these guys have to promise X number of units sold for their investors, and if they don't meet it, you know, it's kind of, that lowers, you know, like, investor confidence in them, because they don't really know how much, you know, like, they need to sell and stuff. I mean, I suppose that's inherent with any business, but it's like, in this particular case, we're getting a statement where this guy is basically flat out saying, I'm done with the game, and I don't want to touch it.
You don't want to touch it? Oh, I see what you're saying.
Yeah. Like, he was, like, really excited every time, like, he makes a... freaking like Smash Brothers game. In this particular case, whatever.
I don't know, man.
Yeah.
Oh, well, I'm not really sad. Yeah. So, right. So what's
next article? Sony posts record loss for last fiscal year. So this is just a short summary. Revenue for Sony Computer Products and Services division is down 18.5% from the previous year. And the division posted a net loss of $2.9 billion. Previously, it posted over $135 million in profit. Sony sold 13.9 million PS3s for the fiscal year, which is down from 14.3 million in the previous year. Software sales are up, though, so that's good. That's probably you.
Oh, shit.
156.6 million sold compared to 147.9 million in the prior year. Now, the Vita said sold 1.8 million units worldwide, and they're expecting a profit of about $376.5 million for the current fiscal year. So, what do you think of this? Like, has the PS3 like audience kind of tapered off? Like, is this like, is it normalized? Are we not gonna be able to sell any more PS3s? You know, like, what does it say about the Vita? Like, they don't even have like software sales numbers for the Vita.
This has been probably one of the most fascinating console generations out there,
uh-huh,
in terms of the so-called console wars.
Uh-huh.
Because what we have here is usually what we've seen the last couple generations was essentially one company dominate. Fuck, we've seen that since NES days.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, Nintendo dominated. The only time anything got really interesting was during those 16-bit wars. The Genesis and Super Nintendo, when they were, you know, one would be ahead for a little while and then the other would drop. And
yeah.
Yeah. What we have here this gen, though, isn't exactly the same thing, but in maybe in some ways somewhat similar. We had the Wii just explode at first.
Mm-hmm.
We had the Xbox kind of be the second place. And then Sony royally fucked up at the beginning of this generation.
Yeah, they did.
They royally fucked up. What we're seeing here is, and I think we're seeing a shift, and I'll explain what we mean by shift, is Sony, what you just described, Sony has lost a lot of money and stuff, but yeah, game-wise, and appealing to core gamers such as myself, they're the much more appealing company at the moment,
mm-hmm,
for me. And the reason for that is, well, part of it is stuff like PlayStation Plus, perhaps, mm-hmm, but it's also they have more exclusives at the moment. More titles that interest me. And I'm not talking just about, you know, your Uncharted or God of Wars and stuff. They have a lot of niche titles, too, that are exclusive to the console. Examples include, you know, stuff that people don't care about, like Hyperdimension and, you know, shit like that. What I'm saying here is, well, Sony lost sales. I think we're seeing a precursor, because what we're seeing is Sony's prepping their approach for the next generation. With the exclusives. That's why we're seeing software sales go up, because they have, again, the better exclusives, mm-hmm, the better selection of exclusives. And that's a fact. I'm not saying that as a fanboy. They offer more exclusives than Microsoft does.
Mm-hmm.
Microsoft has what? Halo? And I'm not being an asshole. I'm just saying that's the truth.
So we're talking about like first parties now, right?
Yeah, first parties. And even to some degree, they have more even more third parties to some degree, like I said.
Mm-hmm.
So we're seeing a shift. What we're seeing here is with Sony losing sales, they're going to make better decisions. Okay. Microsoft, let's talk about them for a minute, is we're seeing a shift in them is that it doesn't seem like they care about, they're going the Nintendo path, like Nintendo mm-hmm. was at the beginning of this generation. And what they're doing is they're trying to cater to a casual audience.
Mm-hmm.
And like example would be last year's E3 press conference, which was boring as all fuck.
Just all Kinect based and stuff.
Yeah. And from what I understand, from what people are speculating, this year's not going to be much different.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not. It's good. So what we're going to see here is Microsoft's going the Nintendo path and it's going to backfire on them.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sorry for getting into this whole console thing, but it's relevant to the news story. And then Nintendo, mm-hmm. who knows what the hell is going to happen to them. So that's all I got to say on that.
Yeah.
But I think that's what we're seeing with Sony. Those financial losses are because of their fuck-ups at the beginning. But I think we're going to see explosion. The one thing Sony needs to do right now is get some Vita games. And mm-hmm. I'm not talking just about ports. I mean, I'm excited for the Persona 4 port as much as you are. But mm-hmm. we need to see more original titles.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not just talking, you know, again, ports, you know, maybe a God of War game or something. And, mm-hmm. and even maybe new franchises. So that's what I got to say on that.
Right. I mean, the only thing that was really announced is there's, I think, Keiji Inafune's game that he announced, I believe, for the Vita. There's that. And of course, there's Gravity Rush, you know. But the thing is, like, I don't know. It's just, to me, like, one of the things that's holding back Sony in this generation was the hardware. And, it, you know, it is a powerful system. I mean, come on, it has, like, 8 cores and stuff like that. The thing is, no one, it's, they ran into a problem with Nintendo, kind of like Nintendo ran into, which is they try to purposefully sometimes make it difficult to port a game from one platform to another. That's not a bad thing. But sometimes people won't spend that time to learn a new platform. And that's kind of the problem here. And what people find in Microsoft is the ease of use because it's already from an existing, like, you know, API, which is, you know, DirectX. So it's always kind of like this uphill battle to, like, convert something from a difficult platform to an easy platform or from an easy platform to a difficult platform. Also, in terms of hardware, there's, you know, and this is not a knock or, you know, on Sony products, because I think that I love a lot of the exclusives. I'm a big fan of God of War 3. I still believe in Gran Turismo, even though I slam it to death. There's a lot of the video hardware just causes a lot of screen tearing, you know, and to me, that's actually the biggest reason why I buy 360 games is because to me, like when I can't, you know, somehow correct that, that is very distracting to me. And when it becomes crucial that pinpoint accuracy sometimes is like integral to gameplay. When you get screen tears and shit, like that's no bueno. Like that is like, there's no way that you can get around that because you're stuck with the hardware. Now, if they have a VSync option, great, but not all games have that. You know, this is an issue that PC gamers get. This is a console, guys. I'm not expecting the freaking turn off VSync, you know, change the textures and stuff and all that stuff. If I wanted to do that, I would get it on the PC.
Right.
You know, and but with that said, what you're saying is true. It'll be an interesting next gen once Sony and Microsoft finally show like what their new consoles are going to be.
I think Sony, what they're going to do is let's look at what's happened. Sony tried the move, and it's kind of funny. They're kind of distancing themselves from the move.
I don't think they're necessarily distancing themselves. I think what they're actually doing is they're repositioning what it is. Because I think a lot of developers think that, oh, yeah, it's another Waggle controller. But remember that one of the news articles we're talking about, BioShock Infinite, will integrate Move into the control scheme.
And I, you know, as far as, well, okay, you're right on that. But, but I will say, you know, it just seems, yeah, but it doesn't, when you watch a Sony press conference, it mm-hmm. seems like, you know, they're not, oh, it's just not the Move show. Like, like Microsoft's downfall is they're too reliant on the fucking Kinect. Yeah. It's like the Kinect became the Xbox 360.
Yep.
And that's my problem with Microsoft. It's not the Xbox 360. It's the Kinect 360.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, Microsoft did a lot of smart moves early this gen. But yeah. Once that fucking Kinect came into the picture, they lost it for me, man.
Yeah, they lost Bungie. What the hell happened?
I lost it for them. I, you know, even when Project Natal, when Kinect was called Project Natal, when it was first revealed, I was intrigued by it. But even that,
mind you, it had a more powerful, you know, it had more powerful innards when it was Natal.
Yeah, I heard about that too. But what I'm saying here is the shitty part is the Kinect overtook the 360. It feels like, and that's a shame. And that's why, like I said, screen tearing doesn't bug me as much as it does you, and I can understand it. And I maybe I don't notice it as much, but I buy my stuff on PlayStation now because I don't know why, really, to be honest. I just do, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But there are a lot of Sony just seems a little bit more generous to the consumer than Microsoft does.
Mm-hmm.
I think. And we talked about the PlayStation Plus and all that.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I feel Sony has, for me, mostly redeemed themselves for the fuck ups of this early gen. Redeemed for me, I feel.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but we'll see what happens next gen. I really think Sony is going to, I think they're gonna fucking wise up.
You know, the one thing that I'm gonna add to this and then we'll move on is that I am surprised that Sony is not promoting the fact, you know, not just for us gamers, but promoting to everywhere, including in the advertising for the PlayStation 3, that when you sign up for PlayStation Plus, you get free shit.
They need to do that because PlayStation Plus is a nice incentive plan.
Yes, it is an incentive plan. It is not required.
And you know what? In my opinion, it is worth it because they do give good stuff.
Yeah.
They don't give crap. It's not like, you know, oh, let's just give a, you know, like a Bejeweled or something. They give you actual, and I'm not saying Bejeweled's not a game, but they give you full-fledged games.
Yeah.
And I mean, they, you know, they'll at least give you maybe one PlayStation 1 game along with like a full, and then there's times when new games will release. I don't know if you've noticed this. There's times when a new game will come out. For example, Awesome Knots, for example, was just released.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll make it free.
Mm-hmm.
Or Simpsons Arcade or things like that.
Yeah.
So.
And you get discounts too with purchases, and you know, you also get into beta. So it's a lot of really neat stuff that you would just, you know, you just wouldn't get those, like, you know, like on Xbox Live.
And you get, like, you get Core and Pulse for free as well.
Well, Core is gone.
Core is gone. What was Core? Was Core the interactive one?
Yeah.
Oh, I kind of liked Core.
Yeah, Core is gone.
Oh, well.
And it's funny because at the same time Core disappeared, a little bit later, like, you know, like this week, they announced that Major Nelson's video podcasts on Xbox Live are also gone.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Maybe no one's watching those.
Yeah, I mean, you know, come on, a show about video games on a video game console? A little bit redundant, don't you think? Wouldn't you just want to, like, download the demo and see for yourself?
That's why podcasts work.
Yep, absolutely.
Because they're, so, when you're not around the video game. Okay, so the last news.
The last news article is pretty important, and this is kind of long, so it's basically a letter from Ken Levine announcing that BioShock Infinite got delayed to February 2013. So let me read the whole thing because it is rather important. When we announced the release date of BioShock Infinite in March, we felt pretty good about the timing. Since then, we've come to realize that some specific tweaks and improvements will make Infinite into something even more extraordinary. Therefore, to give our talented team the time they need, we've decided to move the game's release to February 26, 2013. We wanted to let our loyal and very patient fans know this as soon as possible. I won't kid you. BioShock Infinite is a very big game, and we're doing things that no one has ever done in a first-person shooter. We've had a similar experience with the original BioShock, which was delayed for several months as our original ship date drew near. Why? Because the Big Daddies weren't the Big Daddies you've since come to know and love. Because Andrew Ryan's golf club didn't exactly have the right swing. Because Rapture needed one more coat of grimy art deco. The same principle now applies to BioShock Infinite. So what does this mean to you? It means a bit more waiting, but more importantly, it means an even better BioShock Infinite. The great can be made greater, and we owe it to both ourselves and to you, our fans, to take this opportunity. We're also going to hold off on showing BioShock Infinite at the big events of the summer, like E3 and Gamescom. That way, the next time you see our game, it will be essentially the product we intend to put in the box. Preparing for these events takes time away from development, time we're going to use instead to get the best version of Infinite into your hands in February. So, yeah.
Smart move.
I don't see why people were complaining about this. To me, if Git got released in October, it would have been lost in a shuffle of Assassin's Creed 3.
Resident Evil 6.
Resident Evil 6, Dishonored. I mean, there's a shit ton of games coming out in October.
Yeah,
Not to say that BioShock Infinite is a terrible game, but it's just that you introduce consumer parity. What does that mean? That means you are forcing consumers to choose between your product and maybe five others. And so what happens is one product gets the most of it, but not all of it. And it looks like from what he wants to do is, instead of trying to race to get released for the holiday season, they would much rather release in a time frame that's traditionally not that busy. And I think it's a great idea.
And it will get a better game.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes there's this saying with artists and stuff, sometimes artists don't really, sometimes they can destroy their work if they work on it too much, being like a perfectionist. But I think that it's different here because you're working with a bunch of artists, like we're talking to like maybe 100 people or so, who really want the integrity of the game to be like really good when it comes out. And I think that it really is a terrific idea to make sure that the game is, within standards and stuff of the people who are expecting it to, I think that one of the reasons why people are disappointed about it and stuff is that it won't be eligible for Game of the Year status this year, which people were already saying, like, yeah, it's supposed to be Game of the Year, it's like people were already declaring it as their Game of the Year this year and they haven't even played it.
Well, that's pretty idiotic, but I mean,
yeah,
I'm being honest. It's mean, but it's true. Don't, it's like me saying, that Resident Evil 6 is going to be Game of the Year.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. I won't, because I'm the type of person that, not 2009 comes to mind, my Game of the Year at that time was ended up being Assassin's Creed 2, and remember you convinced me to buy that game so many years ago.
Yeah.
And was I gonna purchase it?
No, you weren't gonna,
because I hated the first one, but it ended up being my Game of the Year, and I thought Dragon Age Origins was gonna be my Game of the Year.
Yeah,
but they turned out to be like my fifth Game of the Year, so.
Yeah, ouch.
So, but this is not a bad thing. Delays are often good.
Yeah,
unless
if it was delayed for about a decade, yes, then start worrying. But even then, BioShock was delayed multiple times. Like, remember that the original BioShock wasn't even Rapture.
Yeah,
it had a completely different storyline. In fact, what Ken Levine did was he completely scrapped the game, and then he remade it. And guess what? Game of the Year.
I also think it's smart not showing it at shows.
Well, the thing is, they've shown a lot already, I feel, with those montages and stuff, those clips of, like, the bad guys. And I think that's, to me, like, the excitement, it builds the excitement towards the game, but I think they even released it too soon. You know? It's not October yet. That's the kind of crap you'd release, like, maybe weeks before.
Right, right. I think going dark is good.
Yes, I agree.
Going dark will be very good. So
yeah, yeah. Because people also don't realize why they're skipping E3 and Gamescom. Okay, that doesn't mean that it's bad. In order for you to make a demo, and this is speaking from experience, you have to basically take a chunk of the game. So basically, what's happening here is, like, let's say you have a car, and you basically, you know, take the motor out, and you try to put it in a motorcycle. Like, it's not going to be a smooth transition because, of course, there are different things that rely upon that specific motor. In this particular case, it's the same thing. You take a chunk of the game, you take the current engine, it's going to look for the other stuff that's missing. It's not going to be like, oh, look, it's I'm just going to run, you know, and I'm okay if I crash. No, because what if, like, you know, like a level later introduces something that's actually crucial to that part of the demo? So you have to tack it on somehow. So it creates more work than it does actually, you know, like for a specific team of people rather than, you know, being able to just kind of shove it out. And of course, the inherent question then is, why don't they just send like a playable build of it, you know, at E3, like the whole game? Well, of course, of the obvious reason that somebody can steal it.
Right.
You know, so there's that added security as well. And of course, there are some people that they send the discs to, like the people who can't attend E3, that they send the demo discs to, who have development kits, who want to try out, you know, the preview, you know, the preview build, as we call it. You know, it's just a lot of work to have something that's incomplete, like, you know, to be shoved off and be made presentable. Because, you know, when you end the demo, you can't just like have it crash. You want it to have a screen saying BioShock Infinite coming out February something 2013. That's a lot of work too, because that's not some guy like throwing a logo on Photoshop and freaking, you know, like, it's a lot of people involved. So I get that. I totally get that.
We'll see.
Now, here's a small anecdote, before we move on. When we showed X-Men Mutant Academy at E3 back in 2000, it was a PlayStation 1 game. I worked on it. I can actually say that. And my producer was actually the guy showing off the game, right?
Right.
So guess what I did?
What did you do?
I went to E3, walked into the booth, played against the computer, beat the shit out of it with all the combos. And of course, my producer's like, wow, it seems like you played this game before. I'm like, yeah, what do you know?
Oh, shit.
And mind you, we've never seen each other ever.
That's funny.
And finally, like, when crunch time came down, he walked down and stuff. He's like, I knew you weren't just some player, like, just coming down to play the game. And I'm like, well, dude, you should have known.
Well, it was a pretty bad game, wasn't it?
No, well, that's, you know what, I'm not normally known to be, like, you know, full of pride or anything like that, but I saved the game from being much more terrible.
Okay.
Than what it is. And I honestly, like, I was the only fighting game guy in the group.
Well, then you saved it from being, you did a good job then.
Yeah, I have friends who, at the time Marvel vs. Capcom 2 came out, when I was, like, in the fighting game community, like, you know, full on during that time period, I've had people walk up to me when they heard me say that I worked on it, say, like, that was not a bad game. That was actually really well done. And I said, well, thanks. You know, too bad the other characters weren't balanced out. Because, really, like, it's funny because it was a great game. So if you can find it, go check it out. This is not something that a lot of people know. The Corey Barlog, who is the creative director of God of War 2, worked on that game.
Oh.
Yeah.
God of War 2 is a good game.
Well, yeah, it's a different game, but, you know, Corey Barlog worked on that. That was one of the first games he ever worked on.
Well, there you go.
Yeah, there's that. But, yeah, so, you know, and mind you, we tested the demo. It was difficult because it crashed too. So it was not an easy job getting that demo for E3, because they did that within like 2-3 weeks. Yeah.
Well,
they don't think the entire year, because why are you going to release a build that was like eight months old to E3? Wouldn't you want the newest one? So of course it's going to take them 2 or 3 weeks. And of course there's the hassle of that. There's the design of the booth, you know, how 2K is going to present it and presentations for everybody for 3 days. E3 is not as fun as it sounds, people.
Yeah. I will say, can I say something off topic?
Yeah.
New Kojima announcement.
Yeah?
At E3.
Really?
Yeah.
You think so?
No, it's been confirmed.
Really? How?
I was reading it somewhere, but yeah, Kojima has a big announcement at E3.
Okay.
Well, remember, he did say that last year. He said they were working on a new game on a new engine.
Yeah.
And he said he would not, he can't show it to you this year, but he said he would show it to you next year.
I see.
So, yeah, this is a fact. He will be at E3 with some sort of big announcement.
Well, he was in Europe, too, from what I remember, like this week.
Yeah. Well, from what I understand, the big announcement is his actual next game. Not a game, not like a Lords of Shadow where he helped out.
Yeah.
This is his next game.
Do you think it's Metal Gear 5?
It might be. I'm a Metal Gear fan, and I will get Metal Gear Solid 5, but I would like to see him do something different.
Yeah.
That's just me. Like, yeah. You know, even revisit maybe Police Knots or Snatcher, or do a new IP altogether. I would like to see Kojima do something different, but...
We'll see.
We'll see. If it's a Metal Gear Solid 5, yeah, I'm still in, but I, again, you know. Okay. And what else could he do with the Metal Gear franchise?
I don't know. Well, it was just kind of like a hypothetical question. Yeah. So.
But we'll see. I will say this. E3 is going to be fucking killer.
Yeah. This year. Absolutely.
It's going to be one of the better years. Now, yeah. Speaking of years.
Mm-hmm.
2012.
What?
We're already to June.
Yeah. I mean, I do want to talk about those games, but I think we should save that for next episode because that news segment was just really huge.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah.
Well, I want to go to to party chat though, because there was this one email that I actually saved for this week because we didn't have time, and I do want to talk about it.
Okay, go ahead.
So this is by Louis D, and I'm just going to read parts of this. Dear Dynamic Gamer Horizon Duo, this is a response on PlayStation All-Star Battle Royale. I think this game looks interesting, even though it's a ripoff of Smash Brothers, but that's, you know, to any games. Good on you. You know, it's like Street Fighter to Art of Fighting to Fighter's History, blah, blah, blah. Super Mario 64 to Jack and Daxter.
Can I interject something? I don't like that term ripoff because every game copies each other to some degree.
Yeah. I mean, it's still mentioned in part of like the nomenclature of like a lot of people, which I don't understand. So,
okay.
Yeah. So even if it's a ripoff of Smash Brothers, there's still some different, like, you know, it's still pretty different. I'm sorry if I'm kind of stuttering here because it's tough to read. Anyway, so he suggested some characters that he wanted to see in the game. So there's Danny Trejo.
What?
From the Fight Lights Out, that is a Sony property. Mind you, Danny Trejo was in Def Jam Fight for New York on the PS2.
He is
a playable character. Yeah. That was actually a really good game. It's by Aki.
I like Danny Trejo.
He's great. Greg from Sports Champions. I have no idea what that is. Deadman from Medieval Moves, Deadman's Quest. Okay. And Rao Utu from Mark of Kree. Interesting.
I hated Mark of Kree.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Me too. Also, I believe they should include Crash and Spyro since they were the reason why the PS1 became a mainstream hit to new gamers. It's just unfortunate they are no longer SEA property. But also, Cloud was published by SEA in a Final Fantasy that was introduced to a new set of gamers. And he even suggests that Kevin Butler would be the main boss with PlayStation Move controllers, the sharpshooter, handgun attachments, and a PS3 controller and with a belt buckle like Captain N.
I, you know what? I wouldn't mind a Kevin Butler in there.
You know, I wouldn't mind Kaz Hirai either. We talked about this last week.
Kaz Hirai. Yeah, well, we did talk about, you know, third-party characters. And we did talk about, you know, we both agreed that Cloud should be in there and so would Snake.
How about the Nissan GTR?
Yeah.
Because, Yamauchi did help build the interface for that.
Fighters Mega Mix did it. They took a Daytona car.
Yep, that's right.
Yeah, so they did that years ago, so that's okay. I was going to say, the Crash and Spyro, though, ideas, I think those are really good ideas.
Yeah, I think so, too.
I mean, their games suck now.
Well,
I haven't played Skylanders, although that seems to be a big thing now, but...
It's a hit. So it's basically Diablo, from what I heard.
Okay. Well, but I will say that they should be on there.
Yeah. I think, though, here's my take on this again. I've talked about a lot of people ever since our last podcast about this, and I kind of changed my opinion on some of these. I think that in order for this to work, they said that it's going to have third party, right?
Right.
This has to have every single character that was integral to the PlayStation brand from past to current.
Oh, I agree.
Like if you know, Cole from Infamous will be there, why not Crash Bandicoot?
Okay.
Or Spyro? Because I think that the more people, because one of the knocks, okay, so one of the knocks that people have is like, oh man, like Sony doesn't have characters. Like, did you guys like look at Smash Brothers? They had to pull the fucking ice climbers from their goddamn game. How obscure could you get?
Fire Emblem characters.
Fire Emblem characters.
Fucking Rob.
What? Like, really, guys? Like, you guys are like, oh, you know, they don't have like any character. I'm like, dude,
the Game and Watch. They had the fucking Game and Watch pixel.
Yeah, I mean, come on, guys. Really now? Well, the thing is, too, with these kinds of games, the reason why they're such is because they're casual, quote unquote, is also because it's a way to promote other brands.
And it's an homage to the history.
Exactly. But I think more so to promote brands. Like, you know, because like let's put it this way. The Smash Brothers that was on the Wii, because Pit was there, that was one of their ways to kind of convince Nintendo, hey, maybe we should make a Kid Icarus game.
Right.
You know, like it's almost kind of like this test platform. Like it's almost like a field test to see how many people actually like certain characters and stuff like that. And you know, like it's almost like a survey that people are buying for $60.
I see.
Uh-huh. So what if, like, maybe, you know, Activision agrees to release, you know, Crash and be in the game and stuff, and people actually liked how Crash plays? Maybe that's a good way for them to segue into an actual Crash game.
That might be a good one.
Yeah. If Solid Snake was in it, or if Sora is in it, for that matter. I mean, there's a lot of possibilities here. And again, like, I agree with what we've said last week, that it should be a celebration of everything PlayStation. And yes, I think they can even go as far as making fun of themselves from time to time. If Jack Trenton is in it as a playable character, you can bet your ass that I'm going to be on there day one buying this game. Because, you know, for a game company to kind of realize, like, you know what, it's not too bad to do that. We've seen parody in video games before. We've seen Bill Clinton do like a freaking slam dunk with a basketball on fire. We've seen Hillary Clinton do that too, and we've seen, you know, like, it, you know, we should just see it. Like, it is everybody.
Oh, look at what they did with Solid Snake and Smash Brothers. That was ridiculous.
Yeah.
Remember, you could get the codec calls and they would say, oh, I'm fighting Sonic the Hedgehog.
But you know what's funny about that, though?
Yeah.
Remember that they were promoting the release of Metal Gear Solid Twin Snakes for the GameCube at that time.
No, Twin Snakes had been released long before that.
Really?
Yeah, Twin Snakes came out in 2004.
When was Smash Brothers released then?
The Smash Brothers Brawl?
For the GameCube.
2008. Yeah. Maybe they were trying to promote Metal Gear Solid 4, which is odd considering Metal Gear Solid 4 was on the PS3.
I see.
Because that did come out the same year.
That's kind of weird, yeah.
Yeah. So, I don't know, but I think Snake needs to be in this game.
Yeah.
He's integral to the PlayStation brand.
Yeah.
So,
but in any case, so that's really like all we have to say about PlayStation All-Star Battle Royale. I wish I could go to E3 to check it out, but we'll see. Many things have surprised me. Like I've heard a lot of people that it doesn't play exactly like Smash Bros. Because for one, I actually heard this, there is no life bar.
Interesting.
Yeah, it just has a super bar.
Let's see what happens.
Yeah, definitely. So anyways, dude, I think it's about time to kind of call it quits and kind of end the podcast. I am so sad that we're ending it like, you know, this early, but let's face it, guys. Did you guys really listen to all those 3 hours that we've been recording the past few times? You know?
Yeah. Well, there's one announcement I want to make.
Yes.
Time trial.
All right.
I'm proposing the next time trial.
Okay.
We're going to do something very interesting.
All right.
I don't even know what to call it. Is it a first-person shooter? Is it a platformer? What is it? But
it is the precursor to Mirror's Edge.
Maybe. I don't know what it is, but I don't know what to classify it. I know what it is.
I'm telling you, it's the precursor to Mirror's Edge.
Perhaps. Maybe it is.
It's first person, and it's a platformer.
But you also shoot in it.
Yeah, but you also shoot in Mirror's Edge.
You do?
Yeah. Oh. You don't want to, but you could.
Okay. All right, so the game is Jumping Flash.
Jumping Jack Flash is the name, right? Or Jumping Flash?
Jumping Flash. Jumping Flash, yes, sir.
Before Faith ever scaled the heights of whatever the fuck city she was in, we had Jumping Flash.
Okay. Oh, shit. Jumping Flash was actually, I believe, it was one of the earliest games for the PlayStation.
Uh-huh.
I don't think it was released right at launch, but the release date was October 10th, 1995.
Yes.
So it is hands down one of the earliest games, and it was also one of the earliest games for the PlayStation Network.
Yes.
So it kind of, you know, went both ways on that thing. What Jumping Flash was you play as a giant robot rabbit named yes. Robbit. Uh-huh. And basically what happens is this evil scientist, Baron Aloha, he's removed giant pieces of land from the crater planet using his gigantic land-lifting machines, I'm reading this from Wiki, to turn into his own private resorts. Aloha also has also removed and hidden away the jet pods that propel each world.
Uh-huh.
As the residents of Crater Planet call for help, the Universal City Hall sends one of its agents, a robotic bunny named Robbit, to find the jet pod, stop Aloha, and save Crater Planet from emptiness.
Yeah.
And Aloha surrounds himself with creatures called Moomoos, small, white, five-limbed creatures with palm trees on their heads.
Oh, Jesus.
Many of the game's full-motion videos feature Moomoos, in an Izakaya, humorously recounting their defeat at the hands of Robbit.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, this is one of the earliest PlayStation games. It's still an oddity in gaming. I've never seen anything like this to this day. So, we will be doing Jumping Flash. It is available on PlayStation Network.
How much is it?
I think about $6.
Okay.
So, that you know, you need to purchase it. I purchased it a long time ago.
Okay, I will purchase it, because I actually wanted to get Jumping Flash 2, but I never got around to it in the PS1 era, so finally I'll be able to play this game.
Yeah, we're going to do just the original. There is a sequel called Jumping Flash. There is a sequel, Jumping Flash 2. I don't know if there is a Jumping Flash 3.
No, there wasn't.
There wasn't? Okay.
No. Okay. So, yeah, so that will be our time trial for the month of May, Jumping Flash for the PS1.
Jumping Flash. Maybe Robbit will be in PlayStation All-Star.
Well, if freaking Toro and whatever the hell his name is could be in Street Fighter Cross Tekken, I'm pretty sure he'll be in it.
By the way, I've known who Toro and them are years, but how are they the PlayStation mascot? I don't see them in anything.
Not here in the United States.
In Japan, though.
Yes.
And how long have they been around?
Since the beginning.
Oh.
Yeah.
You know what I remember from the PlayStation days? That fucking purple head, remember?
No. The You Are Naughty?
That purple spike head from the early PlayStation days?
I don't remember.
Oh well. All right, so yeah, that's Jumping Flash. We'll be doing that in the next month. Probably talk about it in June.
Yes, and remember, guys, you know, send us emails, partychat@gamerhorizon.com, if you guys have any questions about it, if you have feedback about anything we've talked about over the past few. It's really important for us to actually get your opinions, because guess what? It is your podcast as well. We love getting your opinions. Again, it's partychat@gamerhorizon.com. Send us email. Just send us email. You know, if you're drunk, send us email. You know, send us email.
I want to read the drunk email.
Yeah, that'd be interesting, right? If you got, like, you know, and, you know, if you want to talk about, like, anything else too, like video games and whatnot, and video games and video games, of course, you know, email us.
Right.
Where was I going with that? I don't even know.
I don't fucking know.
Anyways, so you guys might want to go to Anthony's YouTube channel if you guys want to check him out at youtube.com/...
Megasex1.
Yep, and he also has a Twitter account.
Megasex1.
Yep, twitter.com/Megasex1. And of course, you can find me on Twitter at twitter.com/EternityInBlack. Follow us on... You know, I keep hearing people about this, like, where am I going to get the next update? Like, when am I going to get the next episode? Twitter.com/GamerHorizon. That'll be the main place where you'll know whether or not an episode is out. That is primarily the place where you'll know everything
about. I will say this. Episodes are usually released on Mondays. The latest, yes, I think we've ever released a video is on Wednesday.
Yeah.
But usually Mondays.
Yes, Monday mornings and stuff. So... Yeah. But yeah, so in any case, again, GamerHorizon.com for all your listening needs. Subscribe to us on iTunes. You know, tell your friends. Email us again, partychat@GamerHorizon.com. We cannot wait to hear your opinions on all of the things that we talked about this week. And of course, we thank you for your support of our podcast. So,
and do the survey.
Definitely do the survey on the website, GamerHorizon.com. You won't want to miss it, please. We're actually getting a lot of really good feedback on it. If you guys would be interested, I would probably, like, you know, like, go there right now, because, you know, and if you guys want to email us, like, in a more personal survey kind of thing, just email us, partychat@GamerHorizon.com. I think I've said partychat@GamerHorizon.com about, like, 20 times now.
Right.
I think. Yeah. So, anyways, partychat@GamerHorizon.com.
Should know the goddamn address by now.
Yeah, by now, yes. You've been listening to about, like, 16 episodes now, and 16 and a half episodes. So, all right, guys. Well, until next week, we'll see you guys later.